Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and this, as always, is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, we're talking about well-being. This is something that is often not high enough on the agenda of everyone, really, not just people in the convenience sector, but people in the working world, in the home world. Well-being is often swept under the carpet and people tend to sort of trudge on in that British way. But it's a massive issue and certainly has been brought to light over the last 18 months. And I would say especially in the convenience sector, because convenience store retailers and convenience store workers, the colleagues that we employ, have been on the front lines for the last 18 months, not just helping people to keep their shelves full, to keep their to keep their communities going, but also having to deal with keeping people safe in stores, as well as on occasion, and horribly, it does still happen and happens way too often, deal with abuse. And all of these things can contribute to issues with well-being, but similarly, none of those things could. It could just be something that someone is dealing with and needs help with. And this and many other reasons are why we've put together the well-being guide, which was launched this morning at a dedicated event, and we're going to get to the recording of that panel session shortly, because it it's a great panel session with experts and retailers, and is really worth a listen. But first, we're going to talk to Steve Dowling, who works in the public affairs team at ACS. He's a public affairs manager, and he's been leading a lot of the work on putting together the well-being guide. Let's have a talk to Steve now. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Busy morning today, obviously, with the launch of the Wellbeing Guide. Let's take it right back to the start, though. How did the idea for the Wellbeing Guide come around?
It's something we've been looking to produce for a little while now. It's been a long time in the making, but I suppose there's sort of two key things, really. One is work we've done in the public affairs team around loneliness before, and the government's loneliness strategy, which is linked to how we as a sector provide sociable jobs and we're key contact points in the community. And as part of that, we committed to help develop new guidance around loneliness, which is touched upon in this guide for those who have read it already. But I suppose another stage was around COVID-19 and the pandemic. And, I want to be clear, this guide is not about COVID-19, but COVID-19 has been a strain on our well-being, each and every one of us, albeit in quite different ways. And I suppose the pandemic's led to many more calls for support, from retailers about how they can help their staff, also how to help themselves as well, and keep above water. So sort of two key areas there, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I'm really pleased to launch it today.
Yeah, and I said in the comments in the introduction that the last 18 months have really shone a light on how important it is to prioritise both physical and emotional and mental well-being. Who is the guide aimed at? Is it just people that are dealing with problems at the moment, or is there a wider catchment for this guide?
I think, it's important how we think about well-being. So, it's a spectrum that we are always on individually. Our balance of negative, positive emotions and everything in between. But this guide, it's relevant for all convenience retailers, whether you're responsible for one store or you run thousands. There should be a few different practical things to pick out from here, but it's really aimed at those smaller retailers, those independents and smaller setups who perhaps don't have as much time as others to look into these things, and really see this as hopefully an almost off-the-shelf template for bringing together a strategy for promoting jobs and staffing stores as best as possible.
Yeah, I think that's really important, isn't it? Because there's lots of small businesses, not just independent retailers. I mean, ACS has a small business and lots of other small businesses that don't have a big formal function for well-being. And this guide really takes a lot of steps into filling that gap, which is great. When you were putting this guide together, was there one thing really that stood out to you as a, it could be a statistic, could be an anecdote of why this guide is so important?
Oh, that's a good question, that one. Something that has really stood out to me whilst bringing this together were actually, the people I've spoken to, different retailers, running all sorts of different stores, is probably the real warmth and you know, retailers care about the people that work in their stores and want them to be as happy as possible in those jobs. And I think that's been quite refreshing and good to have those conversations as well. And, you know, Dee Sedani is one-stop retailer I particularly pick out, but there's you know, scores of others as well. And, you know, in terms of statistics, there's plenty of could roll off for you. But I think it's the fact that one in four of us will have a mental health condition at some point in our lives, which to me is quite a striking one and really brings home, I think, why it's so important that we monitor these things and speak openly where we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the guide itself was launched this morning, Tuesday, the 31st of August. It's obviously been early days, but what's the reaction been so far, both inside and outside the sector and with government?
I think, so inside, you know, inside the sector, it seems to have been received quite well. As I say, I think there's been a demand for this sort of resource for a fair while now, even more so coming after COVID-19. And, you know, it's hopefully providing that framework, and particularly now that the labour market itself is changing. So there's a lot up in the air at the moment. So, you know, obviously we've had Brexit happen, but the impacts of that on jobs are still coming through. The end of the furlough scheme coming along, but also people reviewing what sort of work they want to be doing, especially as working from home in other types of work become much more common. And I think that's a real challenge, I suppose, for convenience retailers and our part of the labour market is making sure our jobs continue to be viewed as good quality jobs. So hopefully, you know, I mean, it's early days, but I think that's actually coming through. And then more broadly, yes, we're sharing this guide with political contacts as well, whether that be MPs themselves, but also government officials that we work quite closely with on policy work. And, you know, we're getting a few meetings in over the next few weeks and things. So hopefully that will be very useful in that regard as well.
Yeah, that's great. And it's all about just, you know, getting the issue taken seriously, first of all, and then obviously delving into the detail and being able to help retailers and colleagues. Obviously, with a lot of the work that ACS does, there's reports coming out, you know, every few weeks. We've got new launches all the time. We've got our local shop report coming out next week, obviously a big event. It's really important that things like this don't get sort of launched and then forgotten about. So what's your ambition for the way the guide's going to be used in the future?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I see this as a living document, something that will be available and useful for ACS members for years to come, and something we'll obviously make sure is up to date as well. But I think it's the point I sort of made earlier in terms of, you know, I want this to be something that members can pick up and use as a sort of a template for looking at well-being in terms of strategies for staffing the business. And I think what that hopefully ultimately results in is, you know, happier staff, which means lower sick pay costs, better staff loyalty, and, you know, more engaged workforces, which therefore help the store itself. And if we can achieve some of that through this wellbeing guide, then I think it will have been well worth it for sure.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Steve, thanks for taking the time out to explain about what the wellbeing guide is about. We're going to go now to the panel session from the launch, where obviously you explained in a bit more detail, which is available on our member portal. But panel session now led by our Chief Executive, James Lohman, with some experts on wellbeing, which is definitely worth a listen.
Firstly, introduce Joanne Smithson from the What Works Centre for Wellbeing, and then two retailers, we're slightly more familiar to many of the audience, Harsh Dassey, a retailer from the Midlands, who we've featured many times for his community work and his work with his colleagues. And Becky Waterbridge from Sewell Group, to be familiar to many of you as well. Joanne, Becky, Harsh, thanks so much for joining us and helping us to further bring this to life. I'm going to start with you, Joanne, because pretty people may not know what Work Centre for Wellbeing is. So just give us a quick top line on what your vision is as an organisation.
Sure, thank you. I'm just delighted to joining you today, delighted to see the guide. And I think for me, what I've loved about working with you is how we take the evidence. So we're the UK's national body for wellbeing evidence policy and practice. And what we've done in this piece of work is say, well, what does the evidence say about wellbeing at work? And how can we tailor this to your context? So I think that's been one of the things I've really enjoyed about working with you today. So we are an independent organisation. We're collaborative. We're very much set up about sharing robust, accessible and useful information about how we can improve people's lives. And as a vision, it is really that we believe as a centre that really the purpose of all that we're doing, whether it's in policy, in practice, in retail, in our relationships, is about improving quality of life for people. And at the centre, we really ask about, are we doing that? And how do we know? So it's about bringing the evidence of what works into practice, but also working alongside people doing interventions to improve wellbeing and to assess, does it make a difference?
Yeah, well, I mean, an undeniably pretty fundamental purpose, really, to everyone's life, no matter whether you work in the convenience store sector or any other. But thinking about our sector and how this applies, particularly Haj, what stood out to you from the guide?
It's just the flexibility that we offer our staff. And absolutely 100% right, we actually build our rosters around our staff and their needs more so than ours. We always put them at the centre of our business because they are really the core of our business. We have to understand, keep them in a good place for them to pass on a good customer service, to look after our customers and look after our businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And Becky, how does that work for you? Because obviously working in retail, but also in construction, facilities management, the other things that Sewell Group do, and particularly because you've won awards for the work that you've done, one of the Sunday Times best companies to work for, and so on. So, and the Queen's Award for Enterprise in terms of promoting opportunities. So lots of things you've done. How does this? How? What role does the discussion on wellbeing play in that work?
I think it's really important because everybody's in a whirlwind, aren't they? Every day, everyone's doing everything that they need to do to look after their businesses, look after their customers, and therefore wellbeing. Sometimes people just think of the physical wellbeing of people, but actually the 8 principles that you've worked through the wellbeing guide with remind people that it's not just about that, that you do have to give people a voice, think about financial wellbeing. And that was one of the things running up to Christmas, that's hugely important. Plus the environmental aspect of it, especially with the diversity of workplaces now, all of those things are the things that you do have to think about. And it's different for every little pocket of people that you've got as well. So giving people a number of areas to think about rather than just a title of something gives them, like Harsh said, the ability to be more flexible for what's right for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And how much of what you've done, Becky, is, I'll come to you afterwards, Harsh, and then to you, Joanne, about what's changed during COVID. I think we probably all thought about people a bit more, thought about the relationships a bit more outside work as well as within work. But has anything fundamentally changed in terms of how we think about wellbeing as a business in your case, Becky?
We did a wellbeing survey with a company called Champion Health, and then literally we got the data and then 2 days later we went into lockdown. So a lot of the stuff that we wanted to do with that, we've not been able to because a lot of it is on physical health as well. So we've just been trying to, we've been honest with people and we've said there's lots of things that we would like to do, but actually what is most important right now is your physical and mental wellbeing and you feeling safe at work. Previously in construction, safe at work would mean your PPE that you wear every day. And it's not just that. And there is a lot of stigma in that industry with it being a harder industry. In retail, it's been a lot more about the anxiety and the worry of people who are or are not classed as key workers and the troubles that creates for families and things like that. So we've almost said we're going to do everything that we physically can, but in some cases it's going to be a person by person view on things because everybody's circumstances are so unique. So we've just gone on the basis of we can deal with what COVID tells us to, but you come to us with what's personal. We will do whatever we can to support you, really, because everybody is so different.
Absolutely. That's a really important point. And actually an advantage for small businesses, actually. I know you're slightly larger business, with an advantage of small business being able to treat everyone very much as individuals. So within that, Harj, you've been well known for having really led your teams and your community through the worst of the crisis, which hopefully is behind us. What about going forward? How do you continue to promote wellbeing among your team into the next couple of years, which hopefully are a bit less frightening?
One of the major things that come out of this was the importance of one-to-ones. Actually, spending individual time on one-to-ones. So we do one-to-ones every quarter with each individual person. And it's not always been me. It's always been either passed on to someone else from line managed. And we really put that to the forefront of actually just having a one-to-one, not recorded one-to-one, but a one-to-one with each member of staff, just to see how they were doing, how they were coping, how what pressures they're feeling. And then just taking on any... So anxiety is massive, but anxiety is built up around about worry. What worries did they have? Why were those worries relevant? And then try to explain some of the decisions that we were making and why we were making them to relieve their anxiety, just take it away from them, showing that they've got another shoulder to cry on. And if they have an issue, and is the problem, with a feeling a bit burnt out, tired, is to actually just sort of say, I know we're stretched and I know you want to do as much as you can, but you need 3 or 4 days off now in a row, not just the weekend or a day here. You need that time away from here just to be by yourself and reset. You can't do that in 2 days. It takes you a good 4-5 days to just sort of feel settled again before you come back into it. So we put that at the forefront of all of our staff. Safety was paramount. It wasn't about sales. It wasn't about product. It was, how do we look after our staff? How do we make sure they are frontline workers, but not recognized as key workers at that point? It was always, we put them at the front of our journey. They were our first concern, our first worry.
That's fair. So much in that, Harj. Brilliant, brilliant thoughts about how to stay at the fore and pick up on some of that stuff later on. Joanne, one of the things there, and Harj was about the one-to-ones, and a lot of this is about conversations with people and good conversations. Some of those conversations are quite difficult. They're on difficult testing subjects, mental health, and so on. What, from your perspective, what would you give as a tip or some advice for anyone watching this, particularly a retailer, about how to approach conversations on really tricky issues like that?
Yeah, I think the first thing for me is about creating that collective voice within your store. So actually, everyone is having those conversations. So we're not just having the wellbeing conversation when we're at crisis point, we're having the wellbeing conversation. We're checking in on our peers, we're checking in on our colleagues, and if we're managers, we're checking in on our direct reports. So I think just having that culture within the organisation as a starting point is a really good thing. I think as well, you know, wellbeing is a big, mental health is a big topic, and don't think you have to tackle it all in one conversation. You know, I think it's not that as well. So I think it's about looking at the steps as well. I think from my side, if we look at what makes wellbeing, so we know wellbeing has negative emotions, so the anxiety that Harj talked about, but it also has positive emotions, so that happiness, peace and the joy and the pleasure and feeling that the things that we do are worthwhile is so important, and that sort of worthwhile bit is a really strong driver of our well-being at work. So I think perhaps when we talk about mental well-being, we need to recognize all the different things that affect us at work and having conversations and looking to maximize those well-being conversations. It's about recognizing the importance of happiness and anxiety, but also purpose and meaning as well. And we know that the biggest drivers of our well-being at work aren't our pay, actually. It's about that sense of belonging that drives that. It's also about a sense of fairness as well. So I think those conversations are tricky, but having an understanding of that wider framing of well-being and making sure we're maximizing well-being and having that within a culture in that this is something that we do, it's something that we talk about in the store, in this organization, can really help.
Yeah. Really interesting. Becky, I want to come to you on that, because winning the Queens Award for Enterprise, promoting opportunities, we talk about progression, we talk about purpose, things like that. Can you, I'm sure there will have been a huge submission on that, but can you tell us a couple of the key things there, particularly around that purpose, around everyone who works in the business being that purpose? Are some things that you particularly think are translatable to other businesses?
I think there's a few key principles that we have within the business that I think gives that sort of atmosphere and that environmental factor that it's something that we believe in. It's more of an ethics approach rather than a tick box exercise. And I think one of the biggest things that we've always said that we do is as much as we physically can is go local, and whether that's employing our people so that it's people serving people from within their own community, it's the suppliers, so we champion in the retail sites, so many local suppliers of absolutely fantastic products. But in the other side of the group, in the estate side, even the contractors and the supply chain, trying to, as much as we can, have at least 80% of them, because there are some specialist ones that you just can't get locally, 80% of that supply chain to be local as well, because that promotes the finances within the local area. It then boosts the local community options when people are spending their money local as well. But through that, it's also looking at encouraging those same people to bring on apprentices, to provide work experience, to be as diverse and accepting as possible in terms of the type of people that they support within their business, giving opportunities. We've done a fair bit of stuff with MenCap. I think the last time we checked in our FM business alone, there was over 30 people that had had work experience and internships and permanent employment. And they wouldn't have naturally, or confidence-wise or whatever it was, been able to seek those out themselves. But a lot of the stuff that we've done is very much community-orientated. There's a lot of fundraising that goes on through the retail sites, whether that's, it covers sort of all bases. We've got Hull Animal Welfare, we've got Dove House, we've got funding the bus for the Tommy Coyle Academy to take the gym to people who can't travel to a gym or can't afford one. So it's a mixture of all things, really, and it's probably because of the mixture of group businesses that we've got. But it's about, it's the social mobility thing for us, I think, as well. It's making sure that people, no matter what, all have access to the same type of things, whether that's paid or free or whatever, because all they need is that, the access and a little bit of confidence, and hopefully they'll be doing great. And the wellbeing bit sort of it runs through that, because a lot of it links into people's self-esteem and their confidence and their self-belief and things like that.
Sure. And it's a really positive message for our sector, because obviously that localness, that hyper-local, I think Steve mentioned in his presentation, that's a big part of what we're about as a business. That's one of the things that is quite unique about convenience stores. Half our customers come from the quarter of a mile, more than half our customers walk to work, so and half our colleagues walk to work as well, so that hyper-local business, so lots there that people can build on, so really positive. But to sort of take it back down to a bit more of a sort of challenge is about, coming to UHAR, just the hours that retailers are working. And you know, this is a hard graft business. There's no getting away from it. And I know from obviously interacting with retailers all the time just how much effort and time people are putting in. Our local shop report shows it up as well. Most retailers working 60+ hour weeks. That number has gone up during the pandemic, and perhaps now we're talking in the chat beforehand about supply issues, which are a challenge for everyone across a whole load of sectors at the moment. That means retailers going out to find products, working even harder to get to that. So do we need to have a bit more of a conversation, Harj, about achieving that work-life balance in our industry? How do we tackle this? Should we try and tackle this?
Well, definitely, without question about, this is something that I've been struggling with. My work-life balance is now unbalanced. It's more work and very little pleasure or downtime, as downtime really being one is time where you get to switch off, because there's so much going on in the industry and so much planning to be done. Christmas really coming up and really being at the forefront of my mind, along with a few other things. You don't switch off, you just don't get that time to disconnect, because you're thinking, how that going to work, how is this going to work, and how you're trying to forward plan everything. So your mind's always going ticking over. But I would suggest to anyone just to take 4 days off. The problem is still going to be there when you get back, but just get yourself a good four clean 4 days off. I did that early this month when I felt like I was burning out, and I religiously now take some days off, which isn't enough time for balance, but it's something that I really need to look at and tackle going forward.
Yeah, so that is interesting. So you say 4 days is the time which you think can give you a sort of full cycle of recharging, if you like, to then come back into the business.
That's just something for me personally.
Yeah.
Well, 4 to 5 days off in a role is when I get a chance to re-energize myself and come back re-motivated. The last 3 months have been very, very difficult.
It has, I think, difficult for everyone. And let's say, I think you make a great virtue of, and it is a great virtue in our sector, just the effort that people put in, the hard work. And we talk about that in a really positive way, because you want to recognize that effort. but it also has the effects of maybe exacerbating that as being something we value above other things, maybe. And I think this is a real challenge for our sector. We want to change how hard our sector works, but at the same time, it's not without its challenges. Joanne, something that Becky said there is really, really interesting about how, in a way, I'm probably paraphrasing wrongly here, but really the work they do with local suppliers and other organisations and charities is probably having a broader impact on the community's well-being, which then has a positive knock-on effect for the small business and their customers and their colleagues. There's a virtuous circle kind of being created there. What's the context in which we're working in outside of our sector? How has the well-being of the nation changed over the past 18 months? I'm particularly thinking, and other particular demographics and communities we should be particularly aware of in that respect?
Well, there's a lot in that question.
Yes, they usually are with me, so just say whatever you think.
So when we've been measuring well-being, individual well-being in the UK since 2011, so we've got some really strong understanding of metrics around this. And there are four things that we measure. We measure life satisfaction, so how happy are we with our lives nowadays? We measure that on a scale from 0 to 10. So if people on the call today just want to think, so on a scale from 0 to 10, where 0 is not at all and 10 is completely, how satisfied are you with your life nowadays? Okay, so if you've got a number in your mind, I'm not going to ask you to disclose that.
You should do a Twitter poll on that later, but yes, thank you.
So that has been, so the average pre-pandemic was 7.7, and that has risen over the last sort of 10 years. But as you can imagine, during the pandemic, that has dropped hugely. We know the things that influence our life satisfaction, our health, our physical and our mental health, the relationships that we have. So our relationships at work, our relationships, our close partner relationships, it's the second biggest driver of our well-being. And what we do, so our work is the third driver. So you can imagine in a pandemic, those have all really shifted. The other things we measure are happiness and anxiety and the extent to which we think we feel the things that we do are worthwhile as well. So those are the four measures. Mm-hmm. And they've all fallen in the pandemic. And the one that perhaps hasn't recovered as much is actually worthwhile. And I think that comes from actually just the sort of the complete shift in what we've been doing. So I think definitely to look at those measures. And we've got, so I've just popped in the chat, sort of the equivalent questions around job satisfaction that you could look to ask as well. You asked me which groups have been affected, and I think over the course of the pandemic that changed. So early on, we saw older people being particularly affected. And as the pandemic has moved, we've seen more of a shift in concern in terms of that well-being bouncing back from younger people. So those 18 to 24s are a particular group that we're concerned about, as well as particularly some of the Black and minority ethnic communities, for example, those working in hospitality, where we've seen huge shifts in the labour market as well. So, yeah, some real concerns about groups. And I guess the whole point about well-being and health is it's subjective. So what matters to me is what's different to yourself and the other panellists and the people on the call. And what we need to understand in our approaches is we know what works, but we've got to make sure we're tailoring that to context as well. So understanding who your communities are and how you support. And just finally, in terms of community well-being, we talk about people, places and power. So it's about who have we got in our community, how are we serving them? It's about the locations and places and spaces we have in our towns, communities, where people can meet and interact and build those relationships. And the power is about our ability to shape the things that are important to us in our local area. So if we're making developments on play areas, or you know, you've done some environmental works, for example, are we able to shape those? So that's the context you're working in. Individual well-being, community well-being.
Interesting. That whole sort of agency competence to be able to change things matters a lot to people, doesn't it?
I think it really does in their job and their community.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we talked a lot about behaviour and our approach and how we interact with people, those sort of personal interactions. Are there some things in terms of more of like the nuts and bolts of employment practice, things like, you know, whether it's about how you encourage progression or benefits or things like that, that you think you found to be particularly important in promoting well-being? Oh, you're still on mute, Becky.
Sorry, there's a building site next door. I can hear a little bit of noise. We've been doing a few different things that we were planning to do anyway, but we've had to either delay or change or do differently because of the pandemic. And because we've got one proportion of people here working day in, day out. We've got some that are still working from home, shielding people. So we've had to try and spin it a number of ways to try and get to everybody. And I think all we've in the past, we'll have promoted wellbeing opportunities, and then we'll have a day or a theme or something that it's there in front of their face, and if they want to try it, then they can do. I think what the pandemic created was that just wasn't enough. So it's okay saying, well, we'd like you to do this for your wellbeing, or don't forget to take your holidays. I think you actually have to track it and say to somebody, you've not had a break now other than your normal working days off for a month. So we start tracking it quarterly now and reminding people. We've just refreshed our handbooks, and there's specific bits in there about making sure that people just take R&R. You don't have to go abroad or go somewhere in the UK just to have a holiday. It's like, gosh, take some time off, reboot, reset, spend a day with your kids or whatever. I think we've done a lot to remind people that no matter what the role is, or whether they are working from home or at the front line, everybody's just as important as everybody else. Everybody has a purpose, and regularly sending out directors updates, updates on what the new rules are or the new restrictions are, because I know some people will have said, I've stopped watching the news, I just can't listen to it now, but they've got to learn it somehow. But at times I'll say, the restrictions may have gone, but we're still business as usual, so we're not going to flood the office full of people, because the infection rate in Hull, the infection rate has been quite high, especially where our head office is located.
Right.
So we've still tried to say, there's no need for us actually to flood the gates open and go, let's still think about wellbeing, but just saying thank you, here's a Just Eat voucher, have a meal on us with your family or whatever it is, to make sure that people are doing stuff with their family as well, not just here's an Amazon voucher, buy yourself something off there. Trying to do thank yous that are meaningful, handwritten cards, all that type of stuff, the stuff that people feel is for them, not just because they work for us.
Not just another system that they're within. That's extremely interesting, and interesting that they're a slightly larger business that you're doing many of the similar things that ours is doing in a much, much smaller business, much day-to-day. We're coming sort of to the end now, so I'm going to ask you for one sort of last comment, really. I'll start with you, Haj, then Becky, then I'll give Joanne the last word. Just really the one thing that you'd advise retailers to be thinking about, the one thing that, coming out of the guide, coming out of the webinar today, coming out of your experiences of the last 18 months and before then, what's the one thing that you'd advise a retailer watching this to do? Haj, what do you think?
I'll pick up on the point of where the conversations are a bit difficult to have it now and again. Silence plays a massive part in having a conversation in terms of listening, letting people vent, letting your staff vent, letting them talk about what they want to talk about. It's not always about trying to fix their problems and fix their lives. Sometimes they just want to outlet to someone that they can just let it all out to. You take it in, you acknowledge it, you accept it, you understand them emotionally, and then you respond accordingly. So don't never be afraid of silence when talking to staff. Sometimes just let them talk. Don't try to fix everyone's problems. Sometimes just listen to their problems.
That's a brilliant piece of advice. Excellent. Becky?
What I would say is that the scope of wellbeing has always been there. Actually, a pandemic has highlighted that. Yeah. But as we accept a very diverse collection of generations, but as new generations come, there are clear expectations that the type of focus on wellbeing that we've had over the past 18 months stays and rises. So people can't just think, well, the pandemic's going away, we can get back to normal. It's always going to be here. So understanding that the eight principles, it's always going to be there, and the onus and the expectation from people that there is a duty of care and that type of stuff is always going to be there. So if it's not already in your business, find a way, even if it's a little bit or it's a lot, to keep an eye on those different eight principles, because it's the core of that employment relationship now. It's an expectation there. It's not going anywhere.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Joanne, last word from you. What's the one thing you'd advise retailers to focus on?
I think it's about just getting to know your people. I think it's as simple as that. If we maybe unpick that a little bit, it's about understanding. I mean, We are at most miserable as individuals when we're at work with our boss. So the more we can do to improve that, the more we can improve people's well-being. So know your people, know how they're doing, let them know they're appreciated, and make sure that when you are doing these well-being interventions, you're doing them fairly and consistently, because what we do and how we matter both is both important.
Great insight from our panel there. Thanks to everyone who took part in the Wellbeing Guide launch. And thanks again to Steve for coming onto the podcast to explain, you know, the origins of the guide itself. You can, of course, download the guide from our website, acs.org.uk, and you can see all the additional resources, the Wellbeing Guide launch itself, and other resources as well on our member-only portal. There is just one more thing to talk about before we leave you on this episode of the podcast, and that is the launch of the 2021 Local Shop Report. So this is our biggest report launch of the year. Happens every year in around September, and it's the comprehensive overview of the convenience sector. So all the stats you need to get ahead when you're talking about convenience. The launch itself is on the 8th of September, both live in person in Birmingham and online if you can't get up to Birmingham, or if you just prefer to be watching these events in your pyjamas, as many of us have done over the last 18 months. Either way, really excited about this and hope to see as many of you as possible there. Until then, that's it for this episode of the Local Shop podcast. As always, subscribe to the podcast to get episodes before anyone else, and follow us online on Twitter at Local Shop Pod.